Professor Leah Watkins from the Otago University Business School. Leila Fernandez playing Emma Raducanu in the US Open Women's Tennis Final, the tournament of the teens. They've labelled it. We'll keep you posted with the score as the match progresses on RNZ National. It's one love to Raducanu at the moment. They've only just started. There was a 9/11 ceremony, memorial ceremony, and a huge American flag draped over centre court as the game began. And IndianExpress.com is not a bad live blog if you want to follow that. The most surprising and one of the most exciting Grand Slam finals of the modern era, this matchup's been called. Emma Raducanu from the UK, the favourite going in, but Leila Fernandez has had the tougher opponents to overcome. Both born in Canada, and I didn't know that. During lockdowns, and a third of the population, of course, is still at alert level 4, and maybe after lockdowns as well, many of us think more about exercise. Doing it more if we haven't been in the habit, changing the nature of it to fit in with the constraints of being cooped up and so on. And of course, spring is here, and the phrase spring in our step presumably has some seasonal wisdom attached. For those of us who are ordinary exercisers, even reluctant exercisers, how often do we need to move our bodies to stay in shape, and how best to do that? And there is some new science attached to that. Dr. Matthew Wright's been writing about it. He's an expert in biomechanics and strength and conditioning at Teesside University in the UK. And he has a lot of hands-on experience with top athletes and youth athletes as well. Hello, Matthew.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you on. I know you have a lot of experience with top athletes, but of course they don't need to listen to you this morning. The rest of us do. Exercise, actually, first of all, it stresses our bodies, doesn't it? We don't always think about that. We think, well, you know, we're exerted and we're a bit tired, but it depletes them in order to gradually improve our health, yeah?
Yes, yeah. So physiologically, it kind of stresses if we're, for example, like we go in the gym and we lift some weights, it's stressing the muscle, and there's almost like a sort of breakdown a little bit when we exercise. And then it's the sort of recovery afterwards that creates what we call the adaptations or the improvement and the improved fitness.
Right from the get-go, actually, I'd like to ask you a question I asked another sports scientist once upon a time, only to be met with the radio equivalent of a blank look. Are there people, speaking of the body getting stressed, Matthew, who stay reasonably healthy but find they cannot really exercise a lot because when they do, their immune system gets overtaxed and they start succumbing to various ailments? I mean, I've heard people say this, but I've never seen it confirmed by science. Are there people who need some exercise but have a low tolerance for a lot of it?
There are some conditions, things like actually long COVID is a really interesting one, and so that where sometimes maybe exercise might be good, but too much is a real problem. But also it's down to our capacity as well. So if we think of an elite endurance athlete that has been training for a very, very long time, they've built up this capacity to be able to train more and train more often and train harder and be able to recover really quickly from that. If you haven't been training so much, you don't have that kind of training age, then you can't expect to do the same kind of training. You need a little bit, it'll stress you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. We may need to exercise more or less than we think. That caught my eye, and I wonder if you could explain what that means.
Yeah, I mean, I was asked to write an article on how often we should train. And of course, I find it really interesting because it's almost an impossible question to answer, and I think sometimes people think that more is better, but that's not necessarily the case, and it depends on so many different things. Things like high intensity interval training can be really small dose, for example 30 second bursts, you know, done a couple of times a week, you know, a few reps of 30 second bursts, for example, and they can have a lot of health benefits for us. So we can get results from, you know, doing a lot less than we might think.
That high intensity interval training, 4 to 7 bouts, let's say, well, let's say 5, of intense periods of 1 minute, then resting for a minute 15, and do this 4 times a week. That sounds very manageable. So, what sort of exercise?
My recommendation would probably to do something that tends to offload the joints if you're going to work at real high intensity, particularly if you're not accustomed to it. I think we can be having some problems if we go for high intensity exercise and high impact exercise. So let's say you did a minute of tuck jumps or something like that. It's not going to be particularly good for our muscles and sort of tendons, and we might end up getting injured. But something on a bike that's really high intensity, there's a lot less impact, so it tends to be safer. And obviously the caveat is there that it's for people who haven't got any underlying health conditions. And it's obviously you may want to consult your GP before doing that type of exercise. But generally speaking, it seems to have positive health outcomes, and it's a bit easy to get your head around, isn't it, than saying, oh, I've got to train for a long period of time. I've got to do an hour in the gym, or and I've got to do it sort of 6 days a week and things like that. That's quite hard to get your head around, where maybe two or three times a week, a really short duration, I think it fits in with busy lives quite well.
I saw stair climbing and stair stepping, up a stair, down a stair, mentioned in connection with high intensity interval training. So that would work as well.
Yes, if you think of on a scale of 1 to 10, with sort of 10 being maximal, 5 being sort of hard, and maybe sort of 3 being moderate. For some people, a stair climbing, walking up a flight of stairs, you're probably going to be getting towards 4, 5, maybe even 6 on that kind of scale. When we think high intensity, it's high intensity for you as an individual, so it doesn't have to be something that's that maybe looks really really high intensity, if that makes sense.
Yeah. In that piece you were asked to write, you said for the average person trying to get in shape, the most important thing isn't necessarily how much exercise you do, but the quality of it. So how do you achieve best quality?
It's probably trying to find something that you enjoy doing and you can keep doing. So it's the sort of quality of the exercise, but the consistency, that's more likely to help your long-term health than perhaps if we just go for it and try and get as much quantity, but not think about the quality.
Dr. Matthew Wright is with us from Teesside University in the UK. In your Daily Mail this week, a trainer was saying if you want to lose weight, for example, forget about cardio, go for weights. What is the weights versus cardio comparison for the average person? What would you recommend, please?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't necessarily agree with putting them against each other. The two very, very good forms of training, but both quite different. But I suppose the approach that you might be looking at there is if we can build kind of muscle mass, lean muscle mass, and that's useful in terms of it, our kind of metabolic rate, so we can start to maybe burn a little bit more fat, more calories through the day, and that might be beneficial from a kind of weight loss perspective. It also helps us move generally, and just generally be more physically active as well. If we're a little bit stronger, we can apply force a little bit better when we're trying to walk upstairs, walk downstairs, and that kind of stuff. So resistance training has got lots of benefits, but equally so does cardio, respiratory kind of exercise as well. So probably not necessarily at the expense of that.
So, Matthew, for people who don't like to exercise much or can't for a variety of reasons, even 20 or 30 minutes a week, which is what those bursts of exercise add up to, is effective. Can I ask you what sounds like an obvious question? What will people find changes for them in their lives if they do this?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's maybe the stuff that you don't see. It's the decrease in maybe risk factors for heart disease, diabetes, these types of illnesses. You should feel more energetic. You should feel happier, and you should feel more energized from doing exercise. Maybe not straight afterwards, but the sort of next day and generally over time. So I think that's a good thing to look out for. Feeling more energized and more likely to want to be physically active.
Maybe not straight afterwards, or maybe not during.
Yes, and maybe not during.
I know the exhortation from health authorities to do 150 minutes a week is good advice, but I suspect it's often not taken. And if people will take a more easily digested prescription, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is, and I think any exercise is better than none.
One thing that discourages people, I think, is when they've been pretty good for a week or two and then something happens that makes exercising harder, you know, issues at work, issues at home, whatever they are, and then guilt sets in because it's been 3 or 4 days without exercise. This is human, isn't it? I mean, this probably happens to a lot of people, and when it happens to us, we feel like a bit of a failure, but we probably need not.
Yeah, I don't think we should. And you have this again. You exercise, and it takes a few days to recover. So that those 2 or 3 days are never really a big problem. It's probably when it goes into weeks. You know, people lead busy lives now, and it's trying to find a way to kind of work this stuff in, and it should be a positive.
It's enough exercise followed by enough rest from exercise. So what's a rule of thumb? Is it every second day? What would you say?
Again, that's really hard because it's the beauty of this topic, really, because it depends on what you've done. So low intensity, relatively low impact exercise, you go out for a walk daily, these kind of things, you don't need too much recovery from. So again, if you're doing high intensity intervals, you can't do those every day. You need a couple of days recovery.
You don't need to sweat. We were always told that, you know, what is exercise? It's when you sweat. You don't need to sweat. It's always been cited as the marker of good exercise, but it's not necessarily.
No, it's probably not a great marker of even the intensity of the exercise. I mean, it's unusually over in the UK, it's really warm at the moment. So, you know, you sort of sat at home at my computer, I'm starting to sweat a little bit in this heat, and I'm not exercising at all. I mean, things like heart rate are good, but I probably wouldn't go off sweat.
You say 2 days a week using weights, if you use weights, is enough?
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, you can get improvements probably from 1 day a week with resistance training. You tend to get better improvements if you do a little bit more. You know, maybe move up to 4 days a week, you'll get more improvements, but you can still get substantial improvements from just doing a day a week. And you don't need, again, with resistance training, you don't need to work to maximal intensity. Heavy resistance is good for us if we're accustomed to it, but it doesn't have to be. We don't have to, if we're doing reps on a bench press, we don't have to do that to failure. We can have a couple of reps in sort of left in the tank, so to speak. And that has just as much improvements, if not more improvements, than going to failure, which is quite interesting. So again, less could be fine with the resistance training.
Yes, it interested me in reading about your research that going absolutely hard out, as we've seen in both Olympics and Tokyo, and athletes saying, you know, I gave it absolutely all I had. Our champion swimmer, Sophie Pascoe, said that a couple of times, and that's great for her. She needed to do that to win gold. But it's a bad idea for most people in their routines.
Yeah, it's probably unlikely to give you the benefits that you're after. Again, depending on what you're doing. If you're doing some sprint training, then, you know, going all out's really important, but that's very short duration and you get lots of recovery in that. Even the top sprinters, they work very intense for a very short period of time and they have lots of recovery in what they're doing. And even the elite swimmers, a lot of their work will be that they compete at high intensity, at maximal intensity all out, but it'll only be a very small amount of the training that they do like that.
Your research is great because it's encouraging for the average person. I don't know if you meant to write it that way, but that's the effect of it, you know, and it is also useful because people don't get deterred by what's ahead. They will start more merrily on a routine that and is modest, but they can build up on it.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, that's kind of the message we want you to get across, really.
It's good to talk with you, and thank you for, you're lucky with the warm weather, thank you for your time in the UK.
Yeah. I know, it's lovely over here at the moment, so.
It won't last, you're heading for Christmas.
Yes, yeah. And thank you very much for having me, it's an honour to speak to you.